From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a fight over the debt ceiling. States get involved in the abortion pill fight, and pastors begin to fight fire with fire. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. With a new sheriff in town, Congress is getting involved quickly in very real ways. And this week, it was a showdown over the debt ceiling. The president wants the debt ceiling raised so he can continue his reckless spending, and Congress is finally saying enough is enough. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins on Thursday to talk about it was Maryland Representative Andy Harris.
Hey, Congressman Harris, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, Tony.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, Congressman, this was a factor in the election of the House Speaker, bringing conservatives along, that we would, in fact, address issues such as raising the debt limit, which will only facilitate additional spending. Am I correct?
That's absolutely right. That was part of the negotiation. That was part of the agreement, that we actually take a stand and we don't raise the debt ceiling without some cuts, without some capping of spending, without an effort eventually to balance our budget. We think that's essential.
So explain for our listeners, as we look at where our debt has gone over the last 20 years, I mean, we are now, as I mentioned, we're approaching $32 trillion. Back in 2010, we were at about $10 trillion. We can't sustain this type of growth in our debt. If we don't address it now, when will we address it?
Well, you're right, Tony. We just have to address it. The bottom line is we can't just keep raising the debt ceiling year after year and just whistling past the graveyard on this. Our debt to GDP ratio, in other words, our debt exceeds our entire output of our economy. We are beyond the point where Greece was about 10 years ago when they essentially went bankrupt. We have to do something about this spending. It's completely unreasonable for the president to not want to negotiate some spending control. You know, it's like your teenager with one of your credit cards just saying, look, just raise my credit limit. You know, don't talk to me about controlling my spending. Just go ahead and raise the credit limit. We're not going to even discuss it. It's crazy. We will discuss it. The president will have to negotiate in the end because the debt ceiling is not going to be increased by the House without some spending control.
So let me ask you about that, Dr. Harris. What will the conservatives in the House, the Republicans, be looking for in exchange to raise the debt ceiling?
So there's several things we can do, Tony. We know one thing we could do is one idea being floated is to say that we will no longer come to these spending cliffs like we had in December where we had to pass an omnibus bill. We could have an automatic continuing resolution mechanism at a decreased spending rate, for instance. We could do what we did back in 2011, 2012, when we actually did cut cap and balance, where in return for a debt ceiling increase, we projected savings over the next several years. Now, the trouble is with that plan is that Congress frequently doesn't live by those multi-year plans, but it's a start. We have to do it. We can't pass a clean debt ceiling. Again, it's whistling past the graveyard. We can't afford our debt now. Our debt service within a year or two is probably going to be over $1 trillion a year just to pay the interest on $32 trillion in debt.
And it's only going up under the Biden economy that's driving up inflation costs. Every increase in interest rates is costing the government more to service its debt. So let me ask you this. This is another part of the negotiations between conservatives and the House to support Speaker McCarthy. That was that the House would return to something that should be normal. That is appropriations process. You sit on the Appropriations Committee. We have, I think, 13 appropriations bills. We've not been doing that. We've been doing either CR, continuing resolutions, or omnibus, like we had this $1.7 trillion omnibus bill. Since Chuck Schumer took over in the Senate, the Appropriations Committee, to my understanding, unless I've missed something, has not even marked up in a single appropriations bill. What if we just went back to the way government's supposed to be in terms of the appropriation? That would probably help rein in some of this spending.
Well, it would, Tony, but I don't think Chuck Schumer is going to change his spots. I mean, the bottom line is he is going to once again try to insist on an omnibus bill. That's why one of our plans to say that, look, when we come to one of these fiscal cliffs, we're just going to decrease spending for the next 3 months or next year by a couple of percent or 3%. Instead of increasing spending, we're actually going to decrease spending. And then there's no threat of shutting down the government or government shutdowns or anything. And it will be an effective way to bring Chuck Schumer to the table to actually do appropriations bills. One of the other things we insisted on was that any member can offer an amendment on the floor to an appropriations bill if it cuts spending. If it increases spending, you can't get a vote on it on the floor. But if it cuts spending, you're guaranteed a vote on it on the floor.
I have to say, Andy, this sounds like a very reasonable approach to a country that has spending that's out of control. I think this is the time to rein it in. But I want to ask you, how are you going to respond? And I say you, the Republicans, how are you going to respond to claims like this that came from the White House press secretary yesterday? Listen to this. Play clip number one, please.
They're threatening to kill millions of jobs and 401k plans by trying to hold the debt limit hostage unless they can, again, cut Social Security, cut Medicare, cut Medicaid.
Your response to that?
Look, this is Medi-Scare all over. This is what the Democrats do. They try to scare people that somehow, those mean, nasty Republicans just want to, push grandma over the cliff. Look, the fact of the matter is we have to get our spending under control. We're going to start with non-defense spending. We're going to start with non-Medicare, non-Social Security spending. But in the end, I will tell you, Tony, and anybody who looks at the figures, we should have a bipartisan agreement on how to control all our federal spending.
Back in 2006, you had an unlikely ally. Then Senator Joe Biden voted against raising the debt ceiling, saying he was not going to support disastrous policies that were amassing and accumulating debt. Now that doesn't seem to be a problem for him.
Well, Joe Biden has no problem with double standards, whether it's the debt or confidential top secret documents in your possession.
Yeah, good point. Dr. Andy Harris, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
And of course, it wasn't just Joe Biden who was against the debt ceiling increase back when President Bush, George W. Bush, was in the White House. Chuck Schumer also did so. In fact, Chuck Schumer was head of the Democratic Senatorial Committee, and he ran campaign ads against Republicans like Governor DeWine in Ohio for voting to raise the debt ceiling. Interesting how this becomes such a partisan issue. But I will say what the conservatives in the House were able to accomplish in the speaker's race and what the speaker agreed to is quite significant. As I said, when that happened, this could be the first good thing we've had in government in a long time. All right, stick with us. More Washington Watch on the other side of this break.
Persecution of Christians is growing globally and becoming more aggressive every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's new book, Heroic Faith, highlights personal stories from those who endure religious persecution and takes a close look at the tragic circumstances Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith.
Are you a university student or do you know a university student? One looking to be equipped as a Christian leader and to learn how to promote faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture? Join us at Family Research Council for our 12 to 15 week internship program. With a speaker series focusing on careers and callings, lectures from prominent conservative leaders, and weekly biblical worldview training, you will grow in personal and professional development. You will have the opportunity to work in a variety of departments, with positions ranging from policy to communications, allowing you to gain real-world experience working directly with our experts. FRC seeks to guide interns in pursuing careers of influence so they can make a difference wherever God calls them. This paid internship offers fully funded housing in the heart of downtown DC, giving you the chance to grow in community and experience the city. Take the next step in your professional journey and have the experience of a lifetime. Visit frc.org/internships to apply. It is so important for God's children to spend time with Him in His Word, but it can be difficult to know where to start. We know that all Scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness, and God uses it to prepare and equip His people to do every good work. That is why Family Research Council offers their Stand on the Word Bible Reading Plan. This plan will help you read the Bible daily so you can be transformed by God's Word. Sign up today by visiting frc.org/Bible.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, I've discussed this many times, and I'm going to continue to discuss it, and that is the decision, unilateral decision, by the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, to change its rules to allow pharmacies to sell chemical abortion pills. I mean, this essentially makes them abortion facilities almost on every corner. And the national chains like CVS and Walgreens have already stated they're going through the quote-unquote approval process to be certified so that they can join the abortion industry. Well, I'm not the only one that's concerned about this. In fact, a group of 22 state attorneys general recently sent a letter to the head of the FDA blasting the decision, calling it both illegal and dangerous. Joining me now to discuss this is one of the authors of the letter. In fact, the one leading the effort, Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall. General, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you.
Before we begin, I know your state is recently touched by tragedy with the tornado damage, and it's good to see, you know, the resilience of the people of Alabama, but also how in these times, and we've seen it so many times in my home state of Louisiana with the hurricanes, this is when you see some of the best in people. And I know the Samaritan's Purse has been there on the ground already with the relief efforts. And so we certainly have the people of your state in our thoughts and prayers.
Thank you, Tony. It was remarkable yesterday to be able to tour what was complete devastation in many people's homes, but to see faith community rally together. Had a chance to visit with the staff and volunteers with Samaritan's Purse, who do such a phenomenal job. But it's reaffirming, particularly for those in that community who are feeling so much hurt, to know that people are standing with them.
Yeah, and Samaritan's Purse is a great organization. Regarding your letter to the FDA, how did it come together for attorneys general from 22 states to be united like this?
Well, I think you, in your description, describing this as a unilateral move by the FDA, it's another reflection of the Biden administration's attack on red states. They did it with the COVID vaccine. We've now seen them do it on a gender ideology that's radical and contrary to state law. And this is just another effort of the Biden administration to attack what states now have the prerogative to do after Roe versus Wade and to be able to regulate abortions in our states.
Now, in your letter to the FDA, you pointed out that, you know, previously, back in 2007, when this was first authorized, this the abortion drug, that under the risk evaluation mitigation strategy, this could only be prescribed with a qualified physician and administered in a hospital or clinic to make sure, because of the seriousness of the potential health consequences to a mother who took this. What's changed so that now that a pharmacist can just hand this over, or it can even be delivered through the mail?
Yeah, what's changed is the demise of Roe versus Wade. I mean, that's the only change here, because this rule was adopted to make sure that women's health was protected. When we know that the physician's examination of a woman is extremely important with this medication, because they want to make sure that, because the farther along the medication is used in the pregnancy itself, the riskier it becomes. It shouldn't be used after 11 weeks. And by the FDA abandoning its original purpose in protecting women's health to now try to placate those on the left who would try to integrate abortions into states in which it is otherwise illegal is a reflection that this isn't based on good medical practice, but again, designed to enhance the ideology of this administration. And that is to try to use every vehicle at their disposal to attack what the Supreme Court has done and what states have already at least weighed in where they're authorized to do, like Alabama, and that's to find these abortions illegal.
So General, if a pharmacy were to begin selling this drug in the state of Alabama or some many other states that are on your letter, would that not be criminal activity?
It is in Alabama. And not only that, but it's in direct violation of federal law as well, because one of the things that we saw not only with the FDA issuing this new rule, but we saw a strained legal interpretation issued by the Department of Justice to authorize the Postal Service to begin delivering this medication through the mail. Again, completely in violation of federal law, contrary to state law. And I know that I and many of my colleagues are standing ready to be able to enforce our state law if, in fact, we see these change engage in this behavior.
Now, of course, the federal law, the federal government has to enforce federal law, and the Biden administration, like they do everything else, will just see a two-tiered system of justice. They will not enforce the law here. But in the states, I mean, I would think some of these corporations like CVS and Walgreens, they have some significant liability here if they begin to push this into states that are restricting or protecting women from chemical abortions such as this.
No, they would. And in fact, at least I'm encouraged to see some statements coming, at least from one of those chains, that says that they would not do that in violation of state law. But the reality is the Biden administration is attempting to push every button at their disposal to encourage abortions across our country. And fortunately, we have a group of attorneys general willing to stand up and to be able to push back. And in fact, are prepared to take whatever steps are necessary to make sure that state law has its application here and not somehow or another believe that we're preempted by federal law.
Now, is there the potential of legal action to stop the FDA in this new rule and that they've pushed forward?
There is. And of course, in Alabama, there'll be the opportunity for criminal sanctions as well. You know, we have been very clear from the very beginning, and Alabama proudly was the first state to be able to protect that child for all 9 months in utero, that we're prepared to go after abortion providers and those who aid and abet in those abortions, which would include the dispensing of these particular drugs with criminal penalties. Alabama legislature has spoken very clearly on that. And as Attorney General, I intend to enforce the law.
Well, General Marshall, I want to thank you for joining us today. And again, this underscores the importance of having pro-life, pro-law abiding officials at the state level. If not, we will have no checks and balances against the federal government, as we see right now, that's completely out of control, ignoring the plain law, as you point out in your letter.
Absolutely right. And it's why I'm proud of my colleagues across the country.
All right, General, good to see you again. Thanks so much for being with us.
You too.
You know, we've been talking about this for a number of years now, but you start to see elections for positions that really never got to the radar screen, like attorney generals, the attorneys general in the various states, but a very important role because they are probably one of the strongest voices in keeping this administration in check. And of course, then you have election officers like the secretaries of states and others that oversee state elections. Those are important roles to make sure we have election integrity and accountability. So every person that's on the ballot is important. So don't forget that. All right, don't go away. We're going to come back with some more Washington Watch when we take a look at Pastor Story Hours.
With FRC's Stand Firm app, you will have access to all of our content right at your fingertips. The Stand Firm app provides you with a variety of resources, such as our most recent radio programs, social media posts, and Washington Stand articles. Additionally, you will have the opportunity to take action and make your voice heard by contacting your elected officials on the issues that matter to you. Visit the App Store on your mobile device and search Stand Firm to download FRC's Stand Firm app. Today, there are countless news outlets and so much opposing information. It can be hard to find a source you can really trust. This is why Family Research Council created the Washington Stand, FRC's online news platform with a goal to provide readers with honest, free, and timely news stories and commentaries, all from a biblical worldview. The Washington Stand is based in Washington, D.C., with a team of reporters who provide reliable information on the top issues of the day. They cover breaking news on the biggest Supreme Court decisions, share critical stories in public education, give updates on the state of religious liberty domestically and abroad, and more. The Washington Stand was created to keep you and your family informed on events that are affecting faith, family, and freedom. Stay informed and stand firm in truth by visiting WashingtonStand.com today. Again, that's WashingtonStand.com.
In today's culture, men need a battle plan, a call to biblical manhood, where they can be reminded of God's design for them to serve as provider, instructor, battle buddy, defender, and chaplain. What are the God-given roles and responsibilities for men? Family Research Council's Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and Dr. Keenan Curtin's new book, Strong and Courageous, counters the culture's labeling of manhood and masculinity as toxic and offers a way forward for men. Purchase your copy of Strong and Courageous, A Call to Biblical Manhood at frc.org/strongandcourageous.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. It's good to be back, and it's good to have you with us. All right, I mentioned this at the top of the program, but a new book I have out, Jeremiah, Courage in a Cancel Culture. It's a 40-day study, a 40-day study guide through the book of Jeremiah. For those of you who are on our Bible, our journey through the Bible, you might find this handy. And if you're not, you still might find it handy. So if you'd like to get a copy, a digital copy you can download, just text the word Jeremiah to 67742. That's 67742, the word Jeremiah. Well, speaking of books, as libraries across the nation continue to open the doors of their public taxpayer-funded facilities to host drag queen story hours, Christian leaders have decided to get in on the action as well. Pastors are hosting story hours of their own. And if the attendance at these events is any indication, there is a pent-up demand for exactly these kinds of Christian children's events. Joining me now to discuss this is someone who participated at a recent Pastor Story Hour, Dr. Owen Strand. He is a provost. He is the provost and research professor of theology at Grace Bible Theological Seminary in Conway, Arkansas. And he's a senior fellow at the Center for Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council. Owen, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony. Great to be here.
Well, you recently participated in a Pastor Story Hour. How did it go?
It went great. I mean, what's more revolutionary an act than reading books to little kids at a library? Today, in 2023, that act is revolutionary. And after I announced that there was going to be a Pastor Story Hour, after some other men had started this trend, a local group announced that there would be an inclusive story hour just next door in the very same library. So we weren't sure what exactly to expect, but I tried to get the word out on social media and on the internet, and a ton of people showed up. The room was very hot. The kids were happy. And at the end, Tony, it was very precious. Three children actually volunteered to pray after we read a book about the gospel and God's design of boys and girls. And one child even prayed that we would have good sins. So it was a bit unexpected, but a good event.
You had a lot of parents there, too. Looking at the pictures, a lot of adults were in attendance.
Yeah, Tony, everyone came out. People from a ton of local churches here in Central Arkansas came out. I think the event honestly had several accomplishments, not that were anything great, but I think it blessed kids who heard some stories. I didn't write the stories, but they're good stories. I think the adults in the room, the Christian fathers and mothers in the room, seemed encouraged. A bunch of them asked if we would do it again, which wasn't my thought, but I think we're going to plan to do. And then we also were a witness. We tried to be a witness to those next door. They had a drag queen come and everything, Tony, but we tried to strike up conversations in kindness and warmth. And so the event had a lot of different facets to it.
Yeah, I read the news articles about it. It sounded like your event, the Pastor Story Hour, kind of dwarfed the drag queen story hour across the hall in the exchange of conversations. Always good to have conversations. I agree with you. You stated that in the interview that you did with the Arkansas paper. But is there a sense that Christians are actually looking for an opportunity to take a stand, not a confrontational stand, but simply do something that says, you know what, this is not me. I'm not for the drag queen story hour. Give me something else that I can be for.
I think that is exactly it. Christians are so hungry after being pounded and pressured into silence and submission to all sorts of unjust realities and fake ideas that when you stand up and you do something, but it's in kindness, they're eager to show up and support it. And so I think Pastor Story Hour, honestly, Tony, I think it's tremendous. It's not hard to do. All you really need to do is be a member of a local library, have a library card, if in fact there are still physical cards at libraries. And then you, if you are a member, you reserve a room. You make sure that the library, you know, approves it, and you book the room, you show up, you read the book, you have some chocolate chip cookies or whatever, and you smile at kids. We love kids. Jesus welcomed the little children unto him, Matthew 19:14, and you try to be salt and light. You try to share the gospel. It's really not complicated, and anyone can do it. Pastors should do it. Strong men everywhere should do it. It's a great opportunity to be salt and light, I think.
Owen, was there any resistance from the library when you went to reserve the room?
There was no resistance, to their credit. The Conway Library, it's called the Faulkner County Library, welcomed different perspectives. I tried to make a point after the event of talking to librarians. My mom was a librarian, so I have a soft spot, I guess, for librarians. And in talking to them, they said, you know, we think it's great that you guys afterwards were having respectful, civil discussion with the Inclusive Story Hour folks. So actually, our opportunity there made a little bit of an imprint, and I think they'd probably be open to us coming back. So a lot of us fear the darkness so much in this day and age, like, oh, we've been kicked out of everything. There are some things we have been kicked out, but it turns out there's a lot of ground left to cover. There's a lot of game left to play, and we don't want to take ourselves out of the game too right. early. So something to consider.
But we've got to step into the arena. We've got to go through the door of opportunity. By the way, personal question, with your mother being a librarian, do you use the Dewey Decimal System for your own personal library?
I need to, because whenever I look for books like these ones behind me, I can't find the book I need, commencing okay. a half hour in my study, but I should.
Yes, you should. All right. Owen Strand, good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. Good job.
Great to see you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.